Welcome to Back Porch Chats,
where we have conversations about hope, grace, and recovery.
Our mission is to shape 12-step communities where sponsors and sponsees support each other to move beyond the shame of abuse.
We are dedicated to sharing knowledge about the connection between addiction and sexual abuse with people who are struggling to stop their destructive compulsive behavior.
Are you ready to embrace freedom from your past trauma?
And help others do the same? If so, grab a cup of coffee.
And join the conversation on the back porch with Vince.
And Gina.
Another podcast this week. We've had a busy week. We're building up to the International Overdose Awareness Day event that's going to be in Jackson Square. We've had a podcast today, and we have just had so much fun and so much emotion and feelings in doing this. It just seems like every day it's another heartbreaking conversation of pain that this disease causes. And it's just been great. And somewhere in here, I'm going to shut up. You can jump in anytime you want to, Gina.
I'm taking a minute to do a little power pose because it has been an outstanding week, an exhausting week. And power pose. This is my Rocky stance to make me feel a little bit better, give me a little energy. And it's early in the morning. So it has been a very crazy week.
The guest that we have today is another amazing human being into this recovery world. I've had a chance to meet her once face to face. I was very, very impressed. Very loving, very kind, very offering of what she had available. Early on in me losing my stepson to suicide, she was there for me. Just one little brief conversation, but I just got the feeling that it was a resource if I needed it, going through that pain. And then the other thing is when I'm talking to various people around, like Virginia Guy and Jane Pappas and Julie Waters and Grayson's, the people that we've had on, and telling them our list of what I was hoping to do, it was like, oh, she'll be good. It'll be good. This will be good. Oh, Lisa, you're going to love her. She's great. Yeah. So, we get that kind of energy going on.
I've been in recovery for 3 years, and I've spent all 3 years in this community. And this week, I am meeting a lot of people in the community and connecting with a lot of people that I never connected with. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to meet Lisa a little bit more and talk to her and maybe hopefully work with her in the future. That's my goal, is to be active in the community with what we're doing. So excellent. Yes.
Yes. So let's just go ahead and just jump into this. We have on this the show today, our guest today is Lisa Taggart. Did I say that right, Lisa?
Yes.
Yeah.
Lisa Taggart.
Mm-hmm. Taggart. All right. Good deal. I had a guest on, Miss Grayson there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I called her Marcia the whole time. And after it was over with,
Gina said, Marcia.
I think it's Marcia. So if I call you Linda or something, you correct me, okay, Lisa?
That's okay. Just don't call me late for a meal.
That's it. I get that one. I definitely get that one. All right. So let's just get into this and get right into your story, if that's okay. And then we'll end up out at the back end. So tell us a little bit about your story. Why?
Well, my name is Lisa Taggart, and I created Door to Serenity, which is a nonprofit, and I am a person in long-term recovery. My sobriety date is 12/21/2010, and by the grace of God, my life has changed 10 times for the better because I am in recovery. I have a beautiful wife. I have a beautiful life, and I was destined or always wanted to give back to the community that was given so freely to me in the 12-step program. And I love recovery. A woman took time from her son and from her husband and brought me through the steps. And I thought that was so sacred and so precious that she would do that. And I thought, well, I want to give that back too. And I'm rocking in recovery, and I have everything going for me. And my mom passes away. Mm. And 30 days later, My sister calls me and says, I think I have a problem and I want help. You got help. How could I get help? And I said, well, tomorrow we'll put you in a place and we'll hopefully get you taken care of. And the next day I got the phone call that she had overdosed. Mm-hmm. And so there was no tomorrow for her. And I was devastated. I felt like my legs had been cut off. I couldn't breathe. I had anxiety. The grief was so overwhelming. It overtook me and depression came in. And all these beautiful women in recovery came and supported me. And I'm telling you, I stood on the shoulders of giants when I could not stand on my own. And those were people in recovery. And I went to therapy 3 days a week and cried, couldn't complete a sentence. But I never had to drink or drug. And my wonderful sponsor at the time said that I was in morbid reflection, that I needed to get my butt up and do some action steps mm-hmm. and take a meeting to the place that my sister didn't get to go to. And so every Saturday for a couple of years, we took a meeting to the place that I wanted my sister to go to.
You know, and Lisa, I told my, yeah, one of the reoccurring themes that we've heard this week is that our lovely friends that have overdosed or whatever, it's that, you know, this sign that they just ran out of time. They yes. wanted to get into recovery and whatever, and just ran out of time. It's one of the tragic.
That's exactly what I wrote. I take notes, and then I wrote, see, time may not, time, you know, time's an issue. You may not have tomorrow. And all three of them were, you know, they were looking for a place to, you know, for them to go, or making the phone call to come get them, or, you know, and then yours, she had called out and just one more day is, you know, all she had to make it, really.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Yes. And so when I went to the place where my sister was going to go, I realized that if you were a lesbian, you were told that you could not talk about your sexuality, that was taboo, that you were not allowed to talk about your past relationships, your children that you had in your relationships, that was against their policy. And if you talked about being a lesbian or in a relationship or your sexuality, you were asked to leave. And I thought that's not how step one works. Step one works that you have to be honest about your life. So I thought I would create my own. And it started out as this small nonprofit that would help people go to meetings and sit with them. If you were transgender and you felt uncomfortable going to a meeting, because a lot of meetings are what I call white older men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the hand of AA or the hand of a 12-step person, they feel awkward extending it to somebody that they're unfamiliar with. So at first we started just going to meetings with people and getting them in the door. And then we started feeding and clothing people and then finding resources for them. And right. then on our third year or second half year, we purchased a home and we opened up a home where our door is open when others are closed. Mm-hmm. And so based on the LGBTQ community to have access for someone to go to, little did I know that there's a lot of heterosexuals here and we don't hold it against them. You know, we do not ask their coming out story or what their sexual preference is. We open the door when somebody is needing to come in and get rescued, regardless of sex, color, age. And that is our motto. When one door closes, we want to be open. Mm-hmm. And we're here to talk to parents. For 3 years, I've talked to a family. I've never met them, but we've talked and we're Facebook friends. And they've always prayed that their son would come to us and feel comfortable enough. Mm-hmm. And Sunday, I got the word that he'll never make it and that mm-hmm. he has passed. And that's devastating, you know, that he fell in line with my sister. that it was just one more day, one more promise that yes, he'll get here. And my door will never be open to him for now, he has passed.
Oh. Right.
But for the next person, I want that door to be open.
Right.
And so that's a little about me.
You know, I really relate at the meeting ground where I go to. This white old man it goes over and over again. And being a white old man that's heterosexual and that sort of stuff, you know, I almost feel like that whenever I see somebody that comes into the meeting at the place over here that we meet at, you know, whether they're black, white, obviously not heterosexual or overweight or whatever, you know, just not socially acceptable, look like they just came out from the bridge, I really try to smile and make that person feel welcome, you know. And I get what I feel like sometimes, Lisa, is reverse discrimination because I got short hair and I'm a white cracker that comes from Cracker Land, you know what I'm saying? That, you know, it's almost kind of like, oh, here's another old man prejudice that's going to create some resistance. And just breaks my heart, Lisa. I just want you to know.
It really does. And, you know, there was this huge study and a TED Talk done about what is the solution of addiction. And it's not the absence of the drug. The solution to addiction is connection with other people.
Yes. Yeah.
And that you feel like you belong. And so in Alabama, when there is a meeting place, I got sober with the angry white group, mm-hmm. you know, in the business ties at 6:30 in the morning. And they extended their hand to me. But look at me. I look like a Karen.
Right.
I look like
I said right way too quick. I'm sorry.
That's okay. When people look at me, they don't actually, like I could pass as a heterosexual. I really don't even know what that means. But
really?
Yeah. And so, but I want the hand to be able to be extended without any clicks, without any, oh, you're part of the beautiful people, so you could be in my tribe.
Right.
We should be in a tribe together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of recovery.
The wisdom of the people that create the 12-step groups that says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop whatever. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop. It's not being, you know, anything else. And I love that because that stops so many of us black and white thinkers who, you know, think that there's this or that, whatever. Yes, Gina.
Well, no, I was just, but if you don't fit in with that, there is a sense of alienation, you know, and I feel that as I don't always say the right thing and follow the right, you know, I feel there's a sense of alienation in the group. But the funny thing that's striking me about, you know, what you're saying, Lisa, yeah, I almost called you Karen. Don't do that to me.
Don't do that to me.
The funny thing, though, I never realized it. And yesterday I was having a conversation. I'm taking a course on, and I just finished the course on talking to families, you know, not to the substance user, but to the families about addiction behavior and what their family members and loved ones are going through who are using. And one of the things that came up in that conversation is that something that I hadn't noticed, but it hit me yesterday, is that the 12-step is a very patriarchal community, you know, and I am trying to build a group for women to come into. And it struck me that when I taught, because I used to teach English, and when I taught, I wasn't accepted so much because I didn't follow the patriarchal rules. In fact, I had a principal come into my classroom and says, you can't teach that way. You have to teach this way. And it was very masculine. And I said, no, I can't teach here then because I have this matriarchal style and this nurturing and caring and let's teach at the kitchen table. And that's what I want to see in a group. That's what I'm trying to build in a group for women, is this matriarchal style so that they can feel accepted and not alienated. And I think I know which TED Talk you're talking about, and that's exactly what it talks about, is you have to accept the addiction, not the behaviors, but the addiction of what the person's going through with this loving kindness, because the best way to help them through it is not to shame them with this right. look down on you and point your finger attitude, which I don't think that the 12 step promotes, but I think they inadvertently do. I feel that.
And I can see it changing rather quickly.
Yes.
Because I have long-term sobriety, and because the patriarchs know me and know that I'm serious and that I care.
Right.
You know, it has changed a lot. I see that the hand of AA goes out a little bit more and a little bit more every year. But everybody should feel welcome.
Right.
That place that I went to, that I took a meeting, any given day, there were 70 women in there. And out of the 70 women, where are the African-American women? Mm-hmm. There was only one mm-hmm. or two. And I'm thinking, well, this isn't right. And the same with the meeting house that I go to. Wait a minute. If this is a reflection of our society and 10% of the people population has addiction, then how come I'm in a room where everybody is Caucasian
and
or everybody has the same job? Everybody has,
And oppression implies that you know, certain communities are more overrun with addiction. Okay, so where are they in the rooms? You know,
right.
We have this, and I don't say it because it is a notion. I know that there's a problem in the Native American community with alcohol, but I don't know in all this time that I've seen anyone, you know, from the Native American community in the rooms. And at the same time, you know, I will honor the fact that they very likely have their, you know, their groups. They support themselves. I've taught students in California where they had their own, you know, groups and community programs. So it's there, but I would think that there would, you know, that I might over the past 3 years, as much as I attend meetings, have seen that, and I don't see it.
You know,
right.
We just did a podcast a few back where we talked with Dr. Camilla Williams, mm-hmm. and she's a therapist out in California, and we talked with her about when to get a professional involved. If you're sponsoring people, you know, if we're sponsoring people, we're not professionals, you know, so we can help them work the steps or that sort of stuff. But there comes a time when, you know, there are issues. And I asked her, does she use 12-step groups in her recovery? And she said yes. And I said, how do you use it? And the answer was amazing. She said sustainability. She said mm-hmm. in therapy, we can address acute problems. In physical therapy, we can help somebody get in touch with whatever they need to get in touch with, awareness and all that. But she said there's no sustainability in our therapy. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if they're going to have any chance of sustaining the recovery that they have gotten through therapy, they got to join a group. Now, she said it can be a 12-step group, it can be a church, it can be whatever, but they need to become a part of other people doing what they're doing. And I just thought, gosh, that's what the 12 step does. And then there's so many times that we, because of our own personal fears and paranoias and prejudices or whatever, we destroy that continuity that offers us the sustainability. And that's what we really do. Sometimes we think it's about the steps and all that. And yes, it is. It is that. But for me, the number one thing is that community.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that community and that connection. And that's what got me through the toughest times in recovery. You know, when I was struggling in recovery, the community coming to me, mm-hmm. me standing on the shoulders of giants until I could not stand on my own, and getting the support and allowing myself to get help from, you know, day one, I have a problem with alcohol, to 4 years into it, help me. I don't know what to do with this grief,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. to 10 years into it. Help me, you know, I'm struggling with this situation. You know, I've just had knee surgery, and a complete knee surgery. And so it takes community to heal. It takes my surgeon. It takes physical therapy. But it also takes my personal community, my wife, my sponsor, my spiritual advisor. You know, I cannot be alone. If I'm sitting in bed in pain, spiritual, physical, mental, and not reaching out, then it festers like a wound, you know, and I've always got to do step one is the most important, the honesty principle of I'm hurting. I need help. And if you can't be honest of who you are and actually show your wounds, then the rest of the steps aren't going to work. The rest of the principles won't work.
I got to get on step one before step two. I came to believe that something outside of myself can fix this, and I, you know, that I need to reach out, the higher power, whatever it is. Step two doesn't work if I'm not on step one, and then all that stuff. Yeah, that is that's so awesome. This leads us kind of into the next step. So also you ran, and so you ran into the problems with the meetings and being able to bring that and try to create a safe community for people of all different sexual persuasions to come together. But then you ran if I know anything about your story, you ran smack dab into another issue, and that there were there are not a lot of homes out there that will offer sober living type places. So let's get into that.
We wanted to open a place where everybody feels safe, and that's the big thing for addiction. You know, in the addiction, a lot of danger, putting ourselves in harm, and because of the disease. And so when you want to heal, you need to be safe and you need to be who you are. So I wanted to open up a place that was based on the 12-step principles, where you could be honest and safe, whether you be transgender, whether you be heterosexual, whether you be gay, lesbian, wherever you are, I want a safe place. And I didn't realize it when we opened that I am 56 and I look, so I'm an older woman and I'm very matronly. And so I've become like this mom figure, you know, and it's just such a beautiful thing to see people recover in a home-like environment. It's not an institutional environment. You know, we have chores and we have a home where people take turns cooking and they take turns when you go shopping. What do you want to eat? And just learn the basics of, okay, you're sober, so there's some things that you need to do. Brush your teeth, make your bed, you know, start your day, shower. And being in addiction for years, you forget the basics.
Yeah.
You know, so much of recovery is growing up, is learning how to take responsibility for ourselves. And and that's kind of the goal of sober living. You know, you got treatment and all of that sort of stuff, which will get us sober, but won't keep us sober. And then we come back out, and if we rejoin our old playmates and play grounds, which is what we know, if we return to what's familiar. So this sober living that you have there is a place for people to come in and be gently, and I'm sure sometimes not so gently, into this place of responsibility, learning how to basically grow
and
up.
And most people come very beat down and broken, and they're willing to receive the love, especially the first honeymoon period, the first 30 days, you know. And so, and that 30 days is very, very precious to get a physical. You know, a lot of times we break our ankles in addiction, or we lose our teeth and we don't realize that we're physically hurting until we get sober. So the, you know, that is utmost important to get a physical and see how you are doing. You know, where did you break your bones and what else do you need physically? And then to get connected in the community and get involved. act. You know, when you go to a clubhouse, are you making coffee? Are you taking out the garbage? Are you saying hello to other people? You know, take responsibility.
We got, Gina has got, she does some personal coaching now, SoberCoach.com, where she helps people recover and that sort of stuff. And our tagline in that is now sober, now what? Quitting drinking and drugging or acting out or whatever you're doing, that's just the beginning. You got to be there. You got to do that for everything to come. But after you've been that way 30 days or sometimes it takes a couple of years, you know, I've seen that pink cloud kind of thing work for a while. But eventually, if you don't say now what, you don't get that next level that needs to come. So,
well, and my idea of self-care was a glass that turns into a couple bottles of wine at the end of the day, you know, to de-stress. When I got sober, I had no idea what self-care meant. Go to the beach with my alcohol, you know, go out to go dancing and release with some alcohol and to learn how to do the self-care, even meditate. I remember meditating one time and taking a glass of wine with me so I can meditate. And now that I do it sober, I see the difference. I can actually think instead of hallucinate, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you really savor those things. The first time I went out to watch a band, there's a local musician who I love and I wanted to see them. And I was about 6 months sober and I called my sponsor and I called my spiritual advisor and I went out with two friends. I was like teetering. Mm-hmm. It was something new that I was doing without drugs and alcohol. And when I walked into the Callahan's downtown Mobile, Midtown, and they have the best hamburgers, I realized that people weren't drinking the way I drank.
Right.
Some people even had soda.
Yeah. What's that?
And it was just this eye-opening amazement that, yeah, normal people go out and have one and leave half a glass. Yeah,
right.
I told Vince I need to learn how to normalize the beach without alcohol. You know, got to go to the beach a couple times with support, with someone there who can keep me, you know, on track and on task. And I need to normalize the beach without alcohol because I've done it and it was very uncomfortable. And the last time I wanted to do it, I ran from it. I pulled my car out and went the other direction because I was like, no, I don't know that I can do this. So I said, Vince, we need to go to the beach and we need to spend time at the beach for the purpose of normalizing the beach without alcohol because I don't know how to do it.
Right, because my life is so consumed. Even to get a pedicure and a manicure, of course, my place was the one with the free wine.
Yeah.
Not even good wine. Right, it didn't matter.
It didn't. Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day that's a codependent, and they were dealing with somebody that's addicted to drama and everything. And she says, "Well, I hate to cut her off because she seems to be in need." And I said, "Don't worry, you know, she'll go find somebody else." You know, when I was drinking and drugging, if you had cocaine, I did it. If you didn't have cocaine, well, where's the marijuana? Where's the, you know, it doesn't matter, you know. So
right,
yeah,
we're very, very resourceful.
Yes, we are.
Especially, yeah, and we can be that resourceful in recovery. You know, and I do tell people that I am in long-term recovery and I'm not an anonymous person because I feel it's very important that people see that I'm living. You knew me when I was drunk.
Right.
You knew when the police and the first aid showed up at my house because I was convulsing. Mm-hmm. Why not know me when I'm in sobriety and the changes that have taken place in my life?
I just like to make it clear that none of us represent any of the other organizations, and that was a lot about the early anonymity and that sort of stuff. But if we don't get the word out, who's going to know? And then I'm also know that the first group that started this, Alcoholics Anonymous, is 80 years old, and it's my biggest ego to think that I have any input that will alter that any way at all.
Right.
You know, long past or gone are the days where the organization was so fragile that that it could be dented.
Yeah.
I can't dent it. Yeah. I'm not that powerful. I'm not that huge. So,
right.
But we're not associated.
You know, I'm no longer ashamed. I am proud that I have overcome something. Yes. If I overcame cancer,
yes,
everybody would be celebrating.
Right.
But when we overcome an addiction, you know, the stigma that it's still attached to it, and we could change that one person at a time. And Faces and Voices of Recovery have done a great job in that. And there's a movie called The Anonymous People. Have you seen it?
No.
It's wonderful. And it's about telling people, I am a person in long-term recovery.
Wow.
And look how wonderful my life is because of my recovery, instead of everybody hearing the tragic losses. And our community is so giving and so loving. You know, like you said, Haley's going to be on tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Haley Beeson from The Landing. She started a sober living home before me. And anytime I had any questions, I call. She's like my big sister.
Right.
You know, I call Haley and say, Haley, what about this? And what about that? Or I'll call somebody from the Drug Education Council. Or I'll call somebody from another organization. And I'll say, hey, I don't know how to do this. How can I do this? And they said, well, here's the information. We're a very loving and caring community as yourselves. You know, you're doing this to get that information out there,
you know,
and to be more helpful.
Instead of Haley feeling like your competition or whatever, as would be happening in anonymous, she's there to help you be successful. And we get that in the 12-step community, that a rising tide raises all boats. So let's just be involved in trying to raise the tide. And get help before you run out of time. When I'm working with some of my people, I tell them all the time, relapse, it can be a part of it. Yeah, you can relapse as long as you come back. Yeah, and it's okay. But you need to know that you are going to run out of time if you keep playing, especially nowadays with the narcotics and the fentanyl. You know, we're starting to see the rooms be more cross-addicted than ever before. Hardly do we ever get just a pure alcoholic in the room just because of where it is. And the rooms are getting younger and younger and younger. Oh, my gosh, I can't, you know.
Which is so wonderful, you know, that the addiction length is getting shorter and shorter and shorter.
Yeah. Well, and it used to be, if you go over to the Common Ground, which is my main place that I do in the meetings over there, you used to see a bunch of old white men like myself. When I got in there 27 years ago, that's what I had to deal with. You know, if you go in there now, that's not true. It really is not true. The room is not full of old white. We're kind of a minority. We're in the corner, and we're much harangued and dealt with the prejudice of being classified as old white men. I'm just teasing about that. But
yeah, it's changing. There's less Karens in the room and more Lisas.
and less old men like myself, you know, the old.
Look, the old timers are sacred, and they've taught me. You know, I said I got sober at a 6:30 a.m. meeting with a bunch of old timers that were gracious and loving and caring, and said, come here, we're going to read the big book together. Come here, my wife's going to sponsor you, because I didn't know which way to go. I was just pinging off the walls and crying. Mm-hmm. And I will forever be grateful for my old grumpy old white men group.
Yeah.
You know, they saved my life.
The most important thing that they said to me, and there was a bunch of important stuff they said to me, but, you know, Vince, just keep doing what you're doing. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
And have them. It'll be okay. Just keep doing what you're doing. You're getting there. Yeah, it hurts. It's rough.
Yeah.
Well, how can people support you? You have your Facebook page. What's that?
Yeah. Yes, it's doortoserenity.org and www.doortoserenity.org. And we're on Twitter, and we have an Instagram account, and somebody younger and smarter than me takes care of it.
Yes.
Thank God. And we're selling T-shirts as a fundraiser. We were going to have a fundraiser like back to Broadway, but we had to cancel it due to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
We're constantly having to cancel our fundraisers due to COVID, because the number one thing is respect and safety for others. Mm-hmm. You know, we were taught do no harm, clean house, and help others.
Right.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so you can donate directly there, or you could buy a t-shirt. We also have the Good Samaritan program with Goodwill. So if you, it's so hard to have a clothes closet. Goodwill does a good job on that. Mm-hmm. So if you have a bag of clothes or something you're going to donate, not only do you get your receipt for your taxes, but you could fill out a form. That's the Good Samaritan form, and donate it to Door to Serenity and put our address, P.O. Box 11265, Mobile, Alabama 36671. And they'll give me $5 vouchers to use for new clients who have no clothes.
Wow.
That's really cool.
Somebody who needs shoes for work, somebody who needs, so I don't have to have a clothes closet.
Right.
And that is so helpful because a lot of people come with zero clothes.
Right.
With just a Walmart bag, you know? We also have a closet with, shampoos and conditioners, and I have a lady that coupons, and when her closet is too full, she donates some extra. Wow. And then when we get full, we pass it on also.
All right.
And it's the small things in love that make the big difference.
People do not understand that drugs and alcohol and that stuff can be so rough on us that we forget to shampoo and wash, and that when we start coming back, the desire to do that sort of stuff, and a lot of times we beat up financially, we don't have the money. Sometimes we just forget how. People don't realize just how hard this is. So to be able to have some shampoo and somebody to help you with that and start slowly recover and return into that normalcy. Well, good for you.
Yeah. When and you keep telling your story. That is the most important thing. You know, my son suffers from this disease, and he is 2 years sober by the grace of God. And, you know, we're laughing about the grumpy old men or the Karens, but there's a gentleman who picked him up from the bus station when he came here. He left jail and said, "Mom, I need help." And I said, "Okay, you could come, but you need to be serious about your recovery." And one of those grumpy people in recovery picked him up from the bus station. People in recovery said, "You don't get him in an air-conditioned car. You let him take the uncomfortable bus ride." Mm-hmm. And this gentleman helped him in recovery. When he went to a meeting, he got phone numbers and he got a ride.
Right.
And he is now celebrating 2 years in recovery, free from heroin.
Yeah.
And his history is that he had OD'd 4 or 5 times and was brought back to life from Narcan. Could you hand me that Narcan box, honey? Narcan is a life-saving medicine that will help you. If you're ODing,
mm-hmm.
it's a nasal spray,
mm-hmm.
and it has saved my son's life several times. And there's a training by Jefferson County Mental Health that will train you on how to use it. And they'll actually send you 2 samples, this life-saving medicine.
Wow.
So if your child does have a substance use disorder and you're aware of it, please get this in your hand. You could save a person's life. I told a friend of mine about this, and they took the test on Jefferson County Department of Mental Health, and they got the delivery, and they didn't think anything of it. They thought, right. Yeah, Lisa will do it. And they put it to the side, and they were in traffic, and they looked next to him, and the guy OD'd at the red light. And they went and they had the Narcan and they sprayed it in his nose and they saved his life.
Right.
And that young boy is in Florida in treatment.
Yes. Wow.
And he has a chance.
We do have someone that we, you know, online that we're talking to, trying to get her.
Yeah,
on.
We had a pharmacist professor at the University of where we're discussing just having some trouble scheduling a problem, but we're going to do a whole thing on Narcan from a professional and just bring some awareness. If you'll include that in your email of your links and stuff, we'll make sure we get that in the link for people. That's important, you know, because it just goes back to that. Sometimes we just run out of time. Well, if you got Narcan, maybe we can buy some more time. And gosh knows, you know, those bottoms really, really help.
Now, you know, it could be a stranger that just happens to have it, like you know, your example there, a stranger that just happens to have it in their car. And I don't, you know, one-on-one know of any situation where I would need it. However, I've already talked to Vince about having it on hand just in case, because I don't know that I'm not, you know, not going to be in Cathedral Square coming up on Tuesday, and I'm going to look over and there's that situation. So
I am part of a local search and rescue unit and stuff, and we've got some Narcan there too, because you just never know when you're going to be called out to find somebody, and that's why they need to be found, that sort of stuff. This coming Tuesday, August 31st, 2021, we're going to do this International Overdose Awareness Day, Lisa. Are you going to be there?
Yes, I'll be there.
What's your participation level?
I'm all in. You know, I have a booth that I'm going to be showing up, and I'm going to have a video, and I'm going to ask people to, and I'll have a QR code of, and I'll send it to you, where you could get Narcan and where you could get trained and certified in it. And just praying and meditating. You know, we do not have to have one more.
No, we don't.
Not one more, you know, and we could do that by education, reaching out and connecting with each other. And then I think that's very, very important.
So you're going to have a booth there. That's going to be awesome. That's where I met you before. The first time that I met you face to face, Lisa, was at your booth, and it was very, very helpful for me, because I was right in the middle of my stepson had committed suicide on this. So if they want to meet, obviously come and meet you and be able to talk to you, they can get more information about your Door to Serenity Sober Living. If they want to read some counseling about a son or a daughter or somebody that's having the trouble because of their sexual orientation, you're obviously there to help and work on that. And if somebody walks up with a check to donate, I'll bet you'll take it, won't you?
Yeah, we will.
make that out
to EIN number. I'm allowed to do that. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Make it out to Door to Serenity. Is that what you?
Yes, check? Door to Serenity.
Yeah. All right. So y'all make that check out to that. Good. Do you have anything else to add? I think we've kind of ran the gamut here.
I love that you were persistent enough to get me on here, and I really appreciate what you're doing. And thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yes. Would you come back on when you start cranking up your fundraisers and any event with that? Would you come back on and talk about that with us?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So we're going to switch roles here. I'm going to let you start pestering me.
Okay.
You just let us know when.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, what another wonderful time.
I know.
Elise is such a delight.
I'm excited to meet her on Tuesday. And and now I know where to get that training on that Narcan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful?
Uh-huh.
And we got backportschats.com. Gina and I'll be there participating.
Yep.
And if you want to bring a check to us, make it out. We'll accept a check too. Thank you, Lisa. We're out.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate this.